Sometimes you create the chaos, other times the chaos creates you.
You're listening to the Selfie Is Godcast with Zach Meisel and TJ Zuppi.
Fly ball, deep right field. Back is Spencer at the line, couldn't get the ball.
Subscribe to Selfie Is Godcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Unbelievable.
You got two young kids. Would you say that chaos creates you most days?
There's no doubt about it. No doubt about it. This weekend's been a little crazy. A little crazy. We've got multiple basketball. We got a basketball camp on Sundays, but we got games on Saturdays. We had a wedding yesterday. Thankfully, it was only 20 minutes away, not at the Grand Canyon this time. So yeah, pretty chaotic weekend. I felt sort of like I got caught stealing twice on the bases when I shouldn't.
Chaotic weekend in Atlanta, too. I mean, those were the two best teams record-wise, run differential-wise in baseball. And They played two enthralling games Saturday and Sunday.
Did it live up to the hype for you? It's the battle of the century between these two teams.
The 95 World Series, it was like every game was a one-run game. So this did it justice. It was, you said it the other
David
day.
David Justice?
You said it the other day on our Patreon episode, but the sequel almost never lives up to the hype. And this just felt like, you know, maybe the strike zone was a little bit more fair this time. But other than that, I mean,
maybe.
It was reminiscent of 95.
Maybe. It was a little wild on Sunday for both sides. I could see some complaining on both sides being warranted. And the umpires entering in with a swing that would, I mean, you've seen half swings that are close, that are borderline. You see the one where he swings all the way around and they don't call it a strike. And then one pitch later, he does strike out. And then I'm like, what is happening in the final frame? How does a runner not get out to second base on time that calls a strike on the hitter? And of course, the Braves made that a non-factor as they come back and win this game. Is this the first one? The first game the Guardians have led that they went on to lose?
Well, no, Friday night. Because Kwan hit the home run.
Oh, yes. That was instantaneous.
Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I mean, I prepared to come on here, and if they would have won on Sunday, and it looked for 90% of the game like they were going to, and like say, all right, is this it? Everybody convinced now? And then I'm wondering, you know, a late inning blown lead, second straight day, but by a guy who had not given up a run all year before 24 hours ago. Does that change anything? I mean, like here's the thing. I myself keep waiting for the clock to strike midnight and this team to turn into a pumpkin. And whether it's because they still don't really have the consistent production in the bottom half of the lineup or the bullpen. I mean, we're seeing it. Like, you're seeing guys ebb and flow, right? Gattis is having a rough time right now, but Scott Barlow is back, and he's pitching well. And, you know, that happens with the bullpen. The rotation is something I'll remain skeptical on. Tanner Bibee looked incredible on Saturday night, and we said the other day, if, you know, he needs to just take the reins, just be the ace. He can do it. Just go do it. And that makes everybody else breathe a little easier. But, like, Ben Lively also apparently is an ace. And, like, that's... So I have been waiting for just a series where they just don't look like a pain to play. I don't know. I've been waiting for, and I thought this might be it because the Braves lineup is so good. But they held them in check the entire weekend. And I'm just wondering, like, I understand that they lost 2-3, but it's not like they looked like they were not in the same class here, just in terms of the competitiveness of the games. So maybe this is just them. And maybe a win or a loss on Sunday, given how close the game was, and it could have gone either way there once you get into extra innings, maybe that shouldn't matter. Maybe that should, in terms of our perception of them. Where are you?
Well, I'm glad you brought it up this way, because I told you I was at a wedding over the weekend on Saturday night, and you and I were texting towards the end of the game. At one point said, what was this inning? Because I pulled it up on the game day app in between the electric slide and, I don't know, one of those other line dances that I hate. And
the cha-cha slide?
Maybe that was
Remember that? Two hops this time?
Yeah. I'm still waiting. Is there a part three to that? He always promises that.
That guy had been promising the next part for like 25 years now.
I'm just saying. So I was at this wedding, and oftentimes, I know this happens for you, eventually the table turns to you, hey, what do you do? And I never know what to say in that situation, because if someone doesn't follow sports or baseball or even know that podcasts are a thing, and I start explaining, hey, I do this and I do this, and oh, I also do a podcast, I don't know. So I always ease my way into that. My wife will always be like, ah, he's selling himself short, and then she'll start explaining it, and then so I'm sitting across the table from someone who is actually a big Guardians fan, and he starts picking my brain, and he asked me a series of questions, and I'm so glad that he did, because I'm going to turn the tables on you, and I'm going to ask you to answer the questions that he asked of me. And one of the first ones, and by the way, welcome to the show. It's the Selby is Godcast. I'm TJ, that's Zach. Thank you for clicking play over here on YouTube. Go down there, click like, subscribe if you must. Or don't. Hang out with us, or don't. Find a better use of your time. It's cool. If I didn't have to sit here and do this with Zach, I wouldn't want to be here either. I'm kidding. Find us on Patreon, patreon.com/SelbyIsGodcast.
Again, you're selling yourself short. Get your wife in here.
I'm terrible at this. Come on. Awfully terrible. So what you said was sort of the way that he led into our conversation. Like, what is this team? And I think the easiest thing to say is, yeah, they're playing over their heads. They're not the best team in the American League. I really don't believe that. But what I don't know is the way that this team wins games, and it looked like they were on the path to doing this again on Sunday. The team tweeted out that the chaos creators, I was getting ready to say, should we change Stephen Vogt's title from manager to chaos coordinator? Because it would seem to be the best way to describe his bunch. He's just managing the chaos, and they want to be a team that's running the bases creatively and aggressively and forcing other teams to make errors. And they hit a lot of squibbers on the infield, like you and I joked about on Saturday, the most Guardians inning ever, where they barely hit a ball out of the infield, if at all, but generate runs. I don't know how sustainable that is. You don't know either. You know, none of us really do. But this is the way that they also won games in 2022, and it worked out for them. Didn't work out so well last year. So I don't know how sustainable it is to be a team that has sequenced pretty well for the most part as far as hitting in the clutch with runners in scoring position. Third inning aside, that didn't go so well earlier in this game on Sunday. And we can get into some more of the particulars just of this individual game. But I don't know. I mean, how can you know a month into the season? I think I saw a tweet from Dan Zimborski, who everyone is familiar with Zips. And he had, a couple of years ago, someone had asked, how much do you factor in April to the Zips projections? And you look at how should you adjust your projections a month into the season? And he said it was something along the lines of, once you're a month in, it's 94% projections, 6% April. 6%, that's enough to change your mindset on what you believed entering the season? I don't know. And so I think we're going to be asking ourselves, if they continue to play well and play this sort of style where they're stealing bases and being aggressive and not always hitting the ball out of the infield but still generating offense, I think we're going to be asking this question a lot. Thankfully, we can move this forward in a different direction. You've had a bullpen outside of today that you can count on and have been absolutely splendid. And up until the point where Gattis blew it in the eighth inning, was spectacular in this game as well.
I just think that we're so clouded on what happened a year ago, especially in Cleveland, where they don't do much in the offseason. So it's largely the same group. So we have our, whatever we thought coming into the season, we are so grounded in that belief, it's hard to shake. And yet, with a team so young, you have to be more malleable or flexible in your thought, because guys pop, guys develop, and
or regress. You don't see it coming. They go the other way.
Yes. But I think, I mean, look, they're 19-9. If they were 15-13 or something like that, I think we'd be saying, like, hey, this is a nice start. Like, but they need to fix some things, and you know, try to build off of this. 19-9 tells me, like there can be some fluky things, but if you really examine game by game what's happening, if you'd removed the names from the box scores, you would think this is a really good team. Their run differential is plus 46, okay? And they're 3-4 in one run games. It's not like we became so accustomed to them winning by one run or just getting their teeth kicked in, and that has not happened at all. You know, they're a lot of their losses are like by one or two runs. I think most of them. Yeah, one run, two runs, one run, six, two, eight, four, one. Most of their losses. So, look, they don't have the offense to just be a juggernaut and blow people out every night. And yet they're pitching so well and they're getting that timely hitting that, like, there are plenty of nights where they win and they don't need Class A. So I don't know how sustainable it is because I don't know how long you can lean on Carrasco. You know, I don't know where Logan Allen is at in terms of his development. I'm amazed by Ben Lively. It's a treat to watch him pitch right now. I don't know how he's doing it, really. So I have a lot of questions. You know, McKenzie is still a huge question mark. But I do think that the foundation here, they just are so good at, one, the bullpen is fantastic. And they're able to wiggle out of jams. They're able to get strikeouts when they need them. And they have enough depth where if one guy, like Barlow is not pitching the eighth inning right now, and he needed a couple outings, maybe not in close games, to sort of get right. They're able to just put guys in positions to succeed. I think Vogt's done an incredible job. We can talk about Carl Willis, who deserves more credit. I just think that the foundation is there and what you can build upon. If it was 15-13, you'd be saying, all right, get Manzardo, get Gavin Williams back, or make a trade for a starting pitcher. Maybe Curry comes up and like, hey, this team could win the division. Now you're 19-9.
I still feel a lot of those same things though.
yes, you do, but you have a cushion and you have enough evidence that this team that is not clicking on all cylinders and really hasn't been can win games and can like, would it stun you if this team won 90 games?
No, it wouldn't stun me because even entering this year, I felt like it was within the realm of possible. And I'm not saying like possible, like also an alien spaceship can land in the middle of the ballpark. It's possible. I don't have evidence that suggests it can happen. No, I mean, 90 wins felt like it was attainable, just maybe not the most realistic outcome. But also there was this other side of this wide spectrum that we talked about for so long that you just didn't know where they were going to land on it.
But I think that's the key, is all those people who said, and I'm guilty of this too, I didn't think they were going to be this or anything like this. But all those people who said this is like a 95 loss team, like that's out. You know, if I think the 72 yeah. win part of the spectrum is out. They make you battle. I mean, that Atlanta lineup, like, so at The Athletic, we have to do weekly power rankings. There's a group of us who submit what we think are the teams ranked 1 through 30 every week. A few people write them up, and you see them, and you get mad at them. I've had the Braves at number 1 every week since the season started. I think that lineup is reminiscent of some 90s Cleveland teams we saw. I think the pitching staff is good. Losing Strider hurts. The bullpen is deep. But that lineup, man, like there is no time to catch your breath. And the Guardians rolled into Atlanta with Logan Allen, Tanner Bibee, and Ben Lively. And at the beginning of the year, you would have said, all right, that's your, I don't know, your 3, your 5, and your what happened here? Like it's not ideal. And like Acuna was lost. Matt Olson was lost.
Yeah, and in fairness, those guys haven't gotten it going yet, but you didn't allow them to get going against you. They didn't go bananas wild in this series. Did they have some moments? Sure. But star players, even if they're not performing like star players, are capable of having good moments. You held them down for the most part in this series. So that is totally commendable. And to answer your earlier questions, has my thought severely shifted based on this outcome? Well, a one-run loss. You dropped two out of the three, but two of the games were coin flips, and you stole one, and you let one slip away because of some mental errors. Uncharacteristic for the way this team wants to play. You're also playing one of the best teams in baseball. They didn't look overmatched. They didn't look like they didn't belong on the field. Were the two styles sort of clashing the way that they wanted to play? Sure. Is the Guardians always the prettiest to go back and watch the highlights of how they scored their runs? Of course not. But they still get the job done. And for the most part, they've had a bullpen, which is, it's unfortunate that you had the Gattis hiccup the last 2 days, because I really want to continue to give them love. I mean, when you pull your starter in the fifth inning, the way, and we've seen Vogt really be proactive on this front. He mentioned it in the Tristan start. We were to the part of the lineup where we want to get Heron in the game. It didn't matter if he hadn't gotten past 80 pitches yet and hadn't pitched deep in this game. This is the part of the lineup that we drew up. We wanted to make sure we had Heron ready for, so we went for it. That's the story they tell. Don't know if I believe it, but that's the story they tell. And today, they did a similar thing. I mean, they could have just stuck with where they were at, but they were to the part of the lineup. They were flipping it over for third time through? And they wanted to make sure that it wasn't going to be a case where they've seen him and now they're going to make their big assault at the top of the lineup. No, they pull Lively in that moment. They go to the bullpen that clearly Vogt trusts right now, and to the point where Gattis had the hiccup, it was working to perfection. A lot of the credit goes to the bullpen because as a manager, you feel confident when those guys are pitching well. Yeah, I'm going to hand them the ball. When it's not going well, then it's easy to say, well, I'm going to try to get a little bit greedy with my starting pitcher. But the way that they've won games to this point is the only way that they're going to be able to win games with the rotation in the state that it is in right now, outside of what you got from Tanner Bibee, who was phenomenal. Maybe the best we've ever seen him in his Cleveland career against a really good, there's none of this, well, it was against Oakland, it's against a great lineup, he pitched phenomenally, so he deserves the credit for that. But the bullpen is giving Vogt the options. And to this point, I mean, I haven't complained too much about any of the pitching changes and decisions that have been made thus far with the way that they've handled the pitching staff.
Yeah, so first of all, you're going to get Sam Hentges back too. So that gives you another weapon, and it gives you that second lefty. There were some times Sunday where I thought, I know Heron was warming, and it would have made sense maybe to go to him for the middle of that lineup when you got Olsen lurking there, and they didn't. But you can maybe pull the trigger on that a little more comfortably, especially earlier in a game if you've got Hentges and Heron back there, two big lefties. I think they've just developed an identity and a style of play, and they've figured out the formula that works for them. That's not to say, I mean, like, look, I'm part of me is coming on here and being positive on this team because I think it would have been really simple. And I think there have been some teams in the past, like last year's team would have rolled into Atlanta, lost at least two or three, and just looked ugly doing it. And this wasn't that to me. They just put pressure on you. We saw that didn't work Sunday in extra innings. It hurt them. But
it was silly mistakes. It wasn't I got thrown out of the plate because I was trying to make somebody make the perfect throw and they did. It was mental errors, which the margin is razor thin for this team. You can't have the bullpen hiccups, and you certainly can't get caught twice in Kwan's part and once on Ramirez's part, and he knows it. That's instantly why his head goes to us. It's not because he wants to make sure he didn't go end up on the counter again by losing the helmet. It's because he's frustrated because he knew he made a mental mistake, and that's not something he ever does.
Yeah, they just, it was from uncharacteristic things from uncharacteristic people. And, you know, you look at, like, Gattis had two bad outings, but if you would have said at the beginning of the year, hey, Hunter Gattis is going to have two tough outings of his first 15, you would have said, oh, sounds like a good start, right? Like, it's all about sequencing, when things happen, the timing of it all. And the Guardians have been really good on that front. So it's going to even out. I do think it's important. Like, I want to come in here because I just felt like they sort of proved to me, even in losing 2-3, that they are to be taken seriously. And that I don't know where this goes, but there is a decently high floor here because they are hanging with everybody they play or looking like the better team, even if we may look at the names doing it and be like, really? Like, at some point you just say, I was wrong. My preconceived notions were wrong. And all of that said, you still got to get Kyle Manzardo up here. And you still have to find ways to improve the roster because you're going to need help. And I do think that some of the deficiencies on this roster will be exposed more as the season goes on. And when some of the guys slump or guys have blowups at the wrong times or there's another injury, then you're going to be in trouble. You know, it feels like they're walking a tightrope because they've already had all the adversity. So, like, there are ways that they can improve. And I think, you know, like, just getting Hedges back is big too. Then maybe it's, you know, there's, if someone else finally has a bad outing, like Nick Sandlin or something, you know, there's someone else who can help out. So I also say this knowing you're going to Houston next. And even though they're off to a terrible start, that is a scary place to spend 3 days. Unless you're eating Cafe Ginger for lunch every day. But you can't take your foot off the gas. Like, you have to go win that series.
Save the sponsorship for people that actually pay us. Like SeatGeek. If you're looking for $20 off your first ticket purchase, be sure to use the code SELBY. We'll help you out on that front. Are you ready to take the marriage survey? I don't really know what else to call it. The questions that I was asked at the wedding, I want to ask you. A lot of the same themes kind of at play, and I thought it was perfect because we're a month into the season here. It's a perfect time to really, I mean, we take the temperature every single week, but it's the best time to really zoom out, take an overhead look. Where are we at here? Try not to get too caught up in the most recency of biases, but when you're a month into the season, sometimes that's all you got. First up, is Tanner Bibee fully back?
Back from what?
Well, you know, he wasn't commanding all that great early and was having some issues pitching deep into the game because he would, even if he got ahead of a hitter, he would still let the guy linger around enough that it would inflate and bloat the pitch count that he couldn't stay deep into the games.
I think it was a well-timed reminder of what his potential is. You know, when he got called up, remember, he was a top 100 prospect. He was slinging it 96 miles an hour. He had the nice, figured out a way to use that slider and change up. And I think when he's commanding, that's the guy you want out there. He's a bulldog. He's a guy who is so desperate to give you 6, 7, 8 innings. So I think the key is just like this was his sixth start. It was his best by far. I don't expect him to be able to do that every outing, but he did that against the top lineup in baseball.
Yeah.
That shows you what he can do. And to me, that's just, you take that start, you take the video of it, and you show it to him. Like, he should be watching that start on the team bus, on the team plane, at breakfast, you know, during games.
I'd be doing that too, but just because I just want to see myself dominating, not because I'm really trying to learn anything here. Just watch it because it's fun to see yourself go up against a really good lineup. Yeah, I'm with you.
But I don't think there was any doubt that he wasn't that guy.
Never, never, never. I mean, didn't we say that after his outing before this one that, hey, he's on his way. It's only a matter of time for him, and this was proof in his second-to-last most recent outing that he's on his way, and he just proved to me he didn't really need to prove this, but it's also just nice to have constant reassurance. You know, just sometimes you want to just be told, I love you. Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. And sometimes you want the constant assurance that guy that's going to anchor the rotation could go out and beat anybody. If this was a playoff start.
The wedding survey really got to you, huh?
You know, sometimes you just sit there and you listen to those marriage vows and the tears stream down your face. Just happy tears for the happy couple. No, when you are watching him dominate a great lineup, you don't have to question, hey, playoff series? ooh, how do I massage getting this guy through this lineup two times and then I'm going to be into the bullpen. No, he can go out, and maybe he doesn't do it as pretty as everybody else at this point in his career, but I think this guy's good enough to go out and dominate any lineup in baseball on any given day. And that, if I'm looking at who's going to start the playoff games, your favorite question, that's the lowest of bars we need to clear. Can you face a lineup in the playoffs? And I don't question it. I'm not scared about it. That's clearly Tanner Bibee right now.
Yeah, and I think they need someone to ascend to that role. I don't think McKenzie's in the right place to do that at the moment. So it's got to be him.
And he did it last year, and he did it so wonderfully last year.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with him is every single start, the guy, even if he's not as efficient as you want him to be on a particular day, he still doesn't give up runs. The guy never gives up more than 3 runs. So it's just a question of, you know, is it going to be like a B-minus start or is it going to be an A-plus start? And if your floor is that high as a starting pitcher, that's a really good place to be. Yeah. And for this rotation, they need someone like that who you're not worried about Tanner Bibee going out and going 3 1/3, giving up 7 runs. You know, worst case scenario is it's like 5 innings, 3 runs.
Number 2, after some early struggles, and we've seen it still even through this series at times with Jose, where do you think Jose is on the breakthrough o-meter for him?
I don't know. It's you want him to be more patient, but you also want him to find his swing and just have that, I don't even know how to just that swagger where it's like, you're going to think you made a good pitch and I'm just going to ruin your dreams. The chase rate's at 9th percentile. Walk rate, microscopic. Now, he walked on Sunday, got hit by a pitch on Sunday, but you're just seeing him do the thing. Like, if I was a pitcher, I would just throw him nothing but changeups. I really don't know it. Like, he still makes a ton of contact and doesn't strike out, but you just think, like, this is kind of what I mean why the floor seems high for this team is because he's not gotten going at all. And the offense has been just humming along fine.
Really does look like he's just jumping out of his shoes sometimes to try to get after something. And with this lineup, especially with Josh Naylor hitting behind him, hopefully it gets into him that it's not as necessary to do that, and he can be patient. He can let these at-bats come to him a little bit more. As far as the actual production below the surface, I mean, I would start to get really panicked if he was struggling against fastballs, but he's not. He's still crushing them. He's hitting .333 with a .625 slug against the fastball. To me, that's when when you start to see that happen, you start to wonder, uh-oh, is the cliff coming for this guy? Is he not capable of being a great hitter anymore? To me, it's less about his ability and more about just selectiveness and patience. And sometimes his swing, as far as, you know, being on the right plane and making sure that his launch is where he needs it to be optimized, sometimes he gets into ruts where he struggles. And the good thing is when he starts to lock it in and he gets on one of those stretches for 6 weeks, he's phenomenal. He can't be stopped. I really don't know how to answer my own question here, where we're at on the O-meter here, but it's not, as we see him kind of fade in and out of prosperity and not so much to begin the year, I don't question whether he's going to get there. It just would be nice if it happened at some point somewhere soon. It helps everyone else calm down and everyone else fits into their spots in the lineup so much more nicely when he's MVP Jose Ramirez.
Do you want to hear his annual chase rate since 2018?
Yes. I've been dying for you to ask.
2018, he ranked in the 90th percentile in the league. Imagine an incredibly elite patient, Jose Ramirez. How the hell do you pitch to that guy? All right, the next year, dipped a little bit, 83rd percentile. The next year, 77th percentile. The next year, 72nd percentile. You sensing a trend here? Just dipping a little bit each year. 2022, pretty steep drop, 55th percentile. 2023, 49th percentile. So we have, this is every year it's dropped a bit. And then it just falls off the face of the earth in 2024 down to the 9th percentile. So I don't think it's going to stay this bad. 49th percentile last year was the worst of his career, and that chase rate was 28.2%. This year, 37.3%. That's an enormous jump. I think it'll get better. And I think it's as simple as when it does, then you get ahead in the count more. Pitchers have to throw you more fastballs. They have to come in the zone, and that's where he just feasts. So
exactly.
It's simple to me, but I will say it's a little strange just because it's this trend that's been going on. You would think you could nip this in the bud maybe. And he's a smart enough hitter to figure it out. I mean, remember, he got off to a really slow start last year too. And I know his numbers maybe weren't as sexy as they normally are. They still looked pretty good at the end of the year. So I'm not concerned with him. You know, if he was hitting 180 with limited power, I might be pushing some panic buttons, but like, it's not so bad that you're like, is this guy, did he fall off a cliff here? Is the decline in full force? I'm not there yet.
All right, the next question that came up. Bases loaded, two outs, down a run. Who do you want at the plate right now?
Just down one run?
Down a run. Bases loaded. Two outs.
It's probably Josh Naylor, but I'm also tempted to answer Stephen Kwan. I think Naylor, there's still a... Well, not really, actually. I was going to say there's a chance he strikes out. Maybe it's just because that happened on Sunday, but he doesn't strike out either. With Kwan, I just feel so confident that he's going to just find a way to get that run home, even if it's like just arguing, like convincing the pitcher to just let the guy at third go home. I don't. He's just so smart.
Yeah, that's what made Sunday so. I was so flabbergasted by seeing two errors on his part. I mean, the first one, less of an error, more of a okay. Guy made a move, you got picked off, but the second one to get picked off a second base in extra innings, where you're out there. You need one run at the very least to make sure that the game continues. That's the way that it often feels. And to get picked off there, that was rough. I think I still would go Naylor, by the way, even after didn't have a great finale. And, of course, he struck out in the at-bat. That could have maybe put some distance between Cleveland and Atlanta early on Sunday. But I think I'd still take him. It was just a fun question. I enjoyed that one. Okay.
They both rank in the top five in strikeout rate, top five percentile in the league. Kwan's the best whiff rate in the league. Like, but Naylor also just destroys everything. But if I only need one run, that kind of changes the equation. I would definitely say if it's down two bases loaded, it's Josh Naylor and then a huge gap to anybody else. But that's also the thing is like, that's why I just imagine Jose Ramirez being Jose Ramirez and you have all three of them functioning highly at the top of the order, that would create a lot of havoc.
Well, it's rare that they're all on fire at the same time, any given point in the season. But yeah, that's the dream. Okay, next one. I also enjoyed this one. Who has changed your mind the most since opening day? Whether it's in a good direction or a poor direction, but who has changed your mind the most?
I think I will go. Is it fair to say Tristan McKenzie? Is that unfair? Just thinking about.
It depends.
I don't think he's. There's still time for him to figure it out and become the guy we saw in 2022. I just was not, and this is on me. It's not on him. The guy missed almost the entire year last year. But he doesn't look anywhere near that guy from 2 years ago. And I guess I just assumed he would come back and be a number two or a number three. So I think I would say McKenzie. It feels a little unfair to say that just because, I mean, I can only imagine everything he's got to be working through mechanically, mentally, physically. I don't know. I probably would have said Hunter Gaddis before this weekend.
I know. That's the way I feel too. And it feels really just focused on recency to say Ben Lively. Although this is someone that a month ago, you weren't even sure if you cared if he was on the roster. Now he feels like an integral part of your pitching staff just because of the injuries that you've run into. And more of a curiosity. It's not even a belief or a confidence that it's going to continue, but more of a, I just want to watch more of this. I want to see what's happening here. And I want to dig in more as, you know, we get more data on how he's using his pitches and what they're doing with him that's different than the past. Not only is it an insight into him, but also a further insight into what are they going to do with more pitchers down the line that maybe have a similar skill set. But that again, feels really chained to some recency here to just say, well, it's Ben Lively.
There's not really a good answer to this question, which I think is the point I was trying to make earlier. Everybody's playing the way we expected them to. And yet they're 19-9. So maybe the true talent level of this team is we haven't given them enough credit for it. Maybe it's just better overall than we thought. And also maybe they're squeezing the most out of that potential. And that's a credit to the coaching and the preparation. I think that's maybe the point, is like you can say like it is the same group of players, but that doesn't mean that it has to be the same results. And that doesn't mean that the, you know, the input can be similar in two different seasons. You get different outputs. That's baseball.
Okay, I got one. I'll say David Fry in that.
Yeah.
I figured he could help this team, but I pictured him more being like a piece that helps other parts of the roster connect. It's a nice little connector piece to make sure it all fits together and all it looks neat. But now we're seeing Stephen Vogt seek out at-bats to utilize this guy as a weapon. Pinch hit for your starting catcher in Bo Naylor and get Fry in there, because here's a lefty at-bat and we want to make sure we leverage it as best as possible to get our best hitter up in this very situation that we have available. Is Fry going to be this lefty killer all year? Is this going to be his career? Who knows? I mean, God, we saw Ryan Rayburn go every other year. Guys have flashes where they demolish lefties and then it never happens again, and it was just a flash and you took advantage of it while you could. But I'll say right now, every time there's a lefty on the mound, I get it. I get why you want to make sure you're utilizing this guy for as long. If this is just lightning in a bottle, make sure you've captured it and got every ounce of electricity. I don't think they measure electricity in ounces, but make sure you get every,
I think, ohms.
Watt? Ohms? Watts? Joules? I don't know.
Amps?
Make sure you get every
Nailers?
Bit of juice out of that while you can. And so I get it. Early, like a month ago, if I'd have heard, yes, Stephen Vogt's going to be pinch hitting all the time for Fry for Naylor, you're going to, what? Really? But now it's like, I get it. Or when I see the lineup come out and they're facing a lefty and Fry's in the two spot, well, okay, no complaints here. So utilize this guy as a weapon for as long as he's going to be a weapon.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations, forgotten. The history,
Vegas Golden Knights.
History. We're back to a blank slate, clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
So you know who the answer is to your question? The manager.
But has he changed my mind?
I just didn't know what to expect. I thought there would be a big learning curve. If you would have told me they'd go 19-9 at some point in the season, wouldn't have put it at the first 28 games.
That's okay.
And the way he's leveraged the bullpen, the way he is. How about Class A pitching the ninth on Saturday? I know he pitched the 10th on Sunday, so it kind of goes against the point I want to make, but Class A with nobody on base, and I think, I'm trying to remember what part of the order he was facing. But I like not being afraid to throw him in a tie game on the road in the ninth inning if that's the situation that you need. Instead of in the 10th inning where he's prone to give up some BS base, which happened on Sunday. He gives up a kind of a bloop single and the game's over.
But you had pointed this out as far as bullpen usage go. Look, when we were talking about Barlow early in the year, look at who he's facing. It's not necessarily what inning it is, but who is he facing? And so today, yeah, he didn't go with Class A in the ninth, but who was Beattie coming out to face? He was coming out to face 7, 8, 9. Harris, Kelnick, and Darno eventually pinch hit in this situation. But he was coming in to face the bottom of the lineup. So he's looking here, and that, yeah, Class A could extend the game, give you a better chance, hopefully. But also he's looking ahead to, if this goes to plan, then I'm going to need Class A against the top of the lineup, whether we have the lead or we don't have the lead. I'd rather have Class A there and Beattie against these guys than the other way around.
And that comes, I mean, he spent a year as Seattle's bullpen coach, and he's not the one pulling the strings and deciding who pitches when, but he has the most front row seat to Scott Service doing that. And he's on the other end of the phone and getting guys up and paying attention to why guys get used in certain situations, and also probably learning what not to do in certain instances. So I've been impressed because it seems like he's done this for a while, and it seems like he has a handle on what to do, but also what not to do. And I'm sure there will be some mistakes and some head scratching things as the season goes on, but there have been a lot fewer of those through the first month of the season than I anticipated.
And even if it's a case of his assistants have done a good job of propping him up, making sure he's in a good spot, I would also say it's a good job on the manager to make sure, one, that your assistants are empowered and are part of that conversation, but you know when to listen to them. And you wanted to say how much credit you're giving to Carl Willis and the way that they're getting the most out of these pitchers to this point. But also Stephen Vogt, he's, what a resource. And Carl Willis, who's managed all these Cy Youngs and all these great pitchers, of course I'm going to listen to this guy. Of course I'm going to put him in a position where I'm going to trust the information that he's giving me. And I'm going to try to use that to the best of my ability. And a good manager, yeah, you want someone that's making great decisions, but I also want someone that's comfortable enough to listen to everybody else and listen to people that know what they're talking about. And I have to assume we're not in the dugout to know we're not privy to these conversations, but I have to imagine there's a lot of input being given here that he's taken and utilizing.
Yeah, you know, Carl Willis is in an interesting spot, and it was critical for this team to keep him. I talking to Carl Willis in spring training, and I was trying to just understand why he wants to keep doing this and what drives you. I know for me personally, like, when I'm that age, I hope I'm golfing 7 days a week. But it's someone
only two
who,
more days a week to go.
It's someone who really does love the nitty gritty of it all. And I mean, his answer was, you know, I really want to see this franchise win a World Series. And I'm sure that's true. It's also, I'm sure there are other things that drive him. And he had some things to think about. He's got some family considerations. I know his mom is up there in age. But you think about this guy's career, and he's, a pitching coach doesn't get a ton of attention, but he helped CC Sabathia win a Cy Young Award. He helped Cliff Lee win a Cy Young Award. He helped Felix Hernandez win a Cy Young Award. He helped Rick Porcello win a Cy Young Award. He helped Shane Bieber win a Cy Young Award. And there is a certain level of respect that pitchers have for him. There is a certain level of calmness he helps create. And there's something, and this is why it's difficult. We always say, like, sure, everyone always wants to fire the hitting coach. You want to fire the pitching coach. It's difficult to pinpoint exactly what the value is, how you can't put a number on it. And so it's difficult to even talk about an assistant coach on a podcast, but there is a level of preparation where it's like, again, would it have been shocking to see Lively or Carrasco or any of these guys have a start where they just get shelled early and they have to go to the bullpen for 7, 8? And that hasn't happened. And I just think the guy deserves credit, and it's not just him. You know, he will give credit to Joe Torres, the assistant pitching coach, Brad Goldberg, the new bullpen coach, all of their people helping give statistical input, like Eric Binder. He's the head of the snake there. He's been doing this for so long, and they just, from a pitching standpoint, they never seem unprepared. And I think the job they've done through the first month and the hurdles they've had to conquer and the personnel that they've used to, like, we've said, like, the rotation needs to go deeper in games, and but like, it's not like they've pitched terribly in the 4 or 5 innings that they've gone each start. And the pitching staff as a whole, you know, the ERA is like 320, somewhere around there. So they've done a really good job.
The longevity, though, I think that's what we have in mind.
It's one thing when this staff had Andrew Miller and Cody Allen and Brian Shaw and then Kluber, Carrasco, Salazar, Bauer, and Clevenger. And it was like statistically by war, the greatest rotation ever assembled. This isn't that. And yet the pitching has been really tough. And I just thought Carl Willis deserves some credit, deserves some recognition for that.
That might factor into a question I have coming up in a minute. Second to last question for you. Estevan Florial, where are we at on this experiment?
I don't know. It's been weird. He's probably got to be the guy to go for Manzardo. Do you agree with that? Based on position?
I think at this point, it comes down to him or Laureano. If you're looking at inputs of below the surface, who's doing things the best, it's not a great competition between those two. The fact that Manzardo swings from the left side and Laureano gives you the benefit of having another side of this platoon. I know he hasn't hit lefties yet. Yet is the key word here. We're looking at, what, 24 plate appearances so far? We could get to the point where Laureano is clearly not helping this team in the way that they hoped. And I'd seen some comments, well, he's making money, so they're not going to move. We don't have a list of players that they've kicked to the curb performance reasons why.
Gene Segura on his hammock right now, just kicking back.
they pay guys more to not play for them than the team they actually have on the field. I really don't think the salary is going to be in the way here. It hasn't been a hurdle in the past, unless it's just an astronomical value. And even then, they looked for ways to get out of the Bourne and Swisher contracts. So Florial seems like he might be the guy, but also, yes, he's had some big base hits so far. And that's part of the reason why I want to keep him around. He's got a unique skill set. And off the bench, that sort of is an intriguing skill set. It's sort of reminiscent of the way that they could have used Will Benson back in the day, but you have speed and you have some pop and you have some walks. And that's you're just going to wait on the well-timed dingers. You pinch hit him late in a game. Maybe he comes up with a big hit like he has to this point. But looking below the surface, there's nothing to hang your hat on outside of the walks. Everything else looks pretty bad outside of, I think the hard hit rate is okay. Everything else looks pretty bad so far for him. And the strikeouts continuing kind of like your worst case scenario thought that they could. So I'm not saying I'm to that point right now, dude, but it does. I'm looking for a little bit. I need some more. Give me something to sink my teeth into here.
Let's say Manzardo is on this roster and he and Naylor are starting at first base and DH pretty much every day. You know, maybe Fry or Laureano take away some of Manzardo's at bats versus lefties. But let's say that's your regular lineup. How is Florial? Who's he pinch hitting for, Florial? Not going to pinch hit for Brennan. That's lefty hitter for lefty hitter. And if it's a lefty on the mound, you're going Laureano. I don't think he's really, you know, if you want to pinch hit for Tyler Freeman, I guess, but that doesn't, I don't think that's an upgrade.
Yeah, the day that Hedges started behind the plate, you know, that's an easy one, but that's what, every week and a half?
You have David Fry for that. And if Fry's in the lineup, you have Bo Naylor for that. I think if Manzardo is on the major league roster, Florial has no role. So, and it's not like they need him defensively. He's been starting at DH when he starts. So to me, that's the move. That can be the move tomorrow, yesterday, today, 2 days from now, a week from now, whenever you want. But I think that's the move. And I'm someone who actually is intrigued by Florial. Like, even though he's been not great, nothing is exciting. Like, the OPS plus is still 120. That's just a product of having the ability to hit home runs and draw walks. But you're right. I mean, the strikeout rate's almost 50%. And it is a small sample size, but I just think Manzardo's worst case scenario is probably what he's giving you. So why not make that switch? Especially if you're not using Florial's defensive, you know, the positional benefits.
Yeah, I mean, if I look at the hard hit rate, it's not bad, 44%, but he's also hitting the ball on the ground 56% of the time.
Yeah.
And he's not hitting it. But if you're hitting the ball hard, but it's constantly into the ground, hey, if you hit him through the hole like he has done, props. Well placed, great. The home runs, I've enjoyed.
But which one was your favorite of the two? Mine was the pinch hit against the Yankees.
I mean, coming back against the Yankees to do that to your old team that gave up on you, that's pretty cool. I hate to bury him and say that this is it. I hate to do that. Because I think there are some unique skills here. I really wish there was a spot on this team where you could just carry him to do all year, do that, what he's been doing.
If he was starting for the Colorado Rockies or the White Sox and he got 500 at bats, what do those stats look like?
Maybe I just have some stress here because this is a similar conversation to the one we had again for Benson. There's no space for him here in Cleveland. And he's a guy that's relying on walks and power, and he doesn't fit on this team. And they got other guys that they need to make space for. I felt better about Benson doing sort of what he did last year as opposed to maybe Florial achieving that level. And he is 26 years old. I'm not saying this is like the... How can you give up on this 22-year-old? No, he's 26, right? So he should be to the point where... You should be grasping it here. And I want to be fair to him because I imagine a guy like this with the swing that he has and the strikeouts that he has, he probably benefits more from getting regular playing time. But it's not coming here right now. And I'm anxious to get Manzardo up here. I really, really want to see him in this lineup. I think we're to that point. So I don't know. And between the two, of the fit between Laureano and Florial, if you're just looking at fit alone, when you pair it with Manzardo, you're right. Where's Florial going to get the at-bats as opposed to Laureano? I know he's not the fan favorite right now, but that role, there's still a role for him if you bring up Manzardo. Not sure about that for Florial right now.
Yeah, I'm with you. And Laureano's got a cannon in right field and more of a track record. And if I wanted to go back and answer your question about who's changed my opinion, it's probably Laureano is a good answer there too, just because I thought that'd be okay. You know, he's been dreadful so far. But I think looking forward, you would predict that he'd be more reliable than Florial just because you've seen it before and because he fits the role on the roster makes more sense. And... You know, I don't like votes, not going to maybe play favorites or say you can't cut this guy because he was my teammate, but the familiarity helps. They don't know Florial that well. He's been around them for a few months. I don't know. I don't know how quickly they would pull the trigger on that since they made the trade for him, but makes sense to me. I think Manzardo's ready.
Yeah, I don't feel great. I really don't feel great either way. Here, let me make that clear. Because I really don't want to give up on the skill set yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also really eager. And I'm not sure where you're going to create this opportunity for a kid that we're all just clamoring to see. And it just needs to happen. Final one. Most important thing to happen thus far this year.
Ooh.
Good survey questions from the wedding.
Most important thing to happen this year. Like individually or team wise?
This is up to you. However you want to phrase this.
I'll go team wise. I was going to say just Quan proving that there was another level after all. But if I go team wise, I'm going to say getting off to a good start. And that is so vague, but here's why. They proved to themselves, even
if
it's,
you wouldn't follow the rules.
Even if it's false, even if they wind up a 500 team this year, they have confidence in that room. They're not surprised by this. They're not like going home at the end of every game and being like, oh my God, I can't believe we did it again. Best record in the American League. Like, how is this happening? No. It's confirming to them, whether legitimate or not, that what they did in 2022 is the true talent level and is what they're capable of. And that last year was the fluke. And if they would remember in 2022, like, it took a while to get there. The first few months were not pretty. But last year it was never pretty. And it would have been easy to say, you know, if they start out this season slow, for them to be like, yeah, you know, last year was, that's who we are. And especially individually, it's like, you know, we have more proof that, like, I have no question. Josh Naylor is not getting pinch hit for against a lefty, right? Stephen Kwan is not hitting anywhere other than the top of the lineup. So I think the confidence in that room is important because you can build off of it. Whereas, like, you know, it got ugly. Like, they felt like they needed Cole Calhoun to come in and restore order in the clubhouse. And there are no questions about that now. You know, it's Hedges, it's Kwan, it's Naylor, it's Jose, and there's leadership, there's accountability, there's belief. And I think, you know, again, it's like I think we all just assume whatever we saw most recently is going to factor into what happens next. And I think they're kind of proving that that doesn't have to be the case. And it's difficult to find individual examples for this because guys haven't.
I'm going to follow the rules. I'm gonna say it's clearly the bullpen.
Well,
I really think the bullpen as a whole coming together the way that they have so much.
I wanted
so,
to get philosophical though.
That's fine, dude. You do you. Coming together the way that they have in that, you have Henches coming back, and it's not an easy. Oh, thank God, get this guy out of here and get Henches in here. No, I mean there are going to be ways to get him up here. I don't know how long they're going to keep Pedro Avila around. Or even Tyler Beattie, you think, hey, thanks for coming. You gave us as much as we could have asked for, but we have guys that we just...
Including a championship belt.
And we like what we see more from Cade Smith or Tim Herron or Sandlin. You know, so it's a difficult conversation thanks to those guys making it difficult and giving Vogt the opportunity to manage proactively so far and get guys out of the game earlier and not feel like it's going to be a challenge to stretch to the end of the game. That there's still a game plan in place. I don't know where this team... They certainly would not have the record that they do if they had anything less than a really good bullpen to this point. Even with the way that they've been able to stretch out some games. In those games where they did stretch it out, a lot of the time the bullpen had stepped up and given them the length to enable them to stretch it out later. So I think it's pretty clearly, today aside, the bullpen has been everything you could have asked for and way, way more.
You know how good the bullpen's been? I'm on a little mini vacation turned staycation thanks to our dog, but was going for a walk with my son the other day, and as you know, here's your weekly update. He has memorized every name in the media guide, knows every player, every coach, knows the clubhouse equipment staff. It's insane. He'll just be... He was on the swing the other day just saying Tony Amato's name over and over, but I have two of the media guides because his first one, he ripped a bunch of pages out. And so we went on a walk the other day and he refused to go on the walk unless he could bring the ripped out page of Anthony Gose. So we're on this walk and he stops every few minutes to just look over Anthony Gose's page in the media guide.
Well, you know, they say kids imitate what they see. And how many times have you stared at that Anthony Gose page in your life?
Many. And who knows? Maybe he'll get to watch Anthony Gose pitch in Cleveland at some point. Maybe a great bullpen gets even better.
Dreams do come true. Thanks for hanging out with us, everybody. I wasn't sure where this show would head. I mean, that's the beauty of this show. We don't draw it up, but hey, we're going to take it this direction. We really don't know where we're going to end up, and so I wasn't sure. Usually the vibes aren't too high after a walk-off loss, but I think keeping it in perspective here, 19-9. Wow. For this team out of the gate, that's... take that for sure.
Now you got to go and you got to bury Orbit and his friends in Houston. Send you a picture with my guy.